Welcome back, everybody. Will you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. At this time, please respect our speaker and silence your cell phones. Our speaker is being recorded with her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren. I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Mary Ann, from the Bellflower Group. Warm welcome.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mary Ann. I'm an alcoholic. And yes, I am from the Bellflower Group. I live in Huntington Beach, and I'm happy to be here tonight, but it's been a long time since I've seen so many newcomers in one room. I'm glad you're here, and I will do what they suggest and when they read how it works, and it says we share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what we're like today. Oh my gosh, my mind just went blank. This is a bad sign. It could be either a very short talk or a very long talk. For the people that are new, I was just reminded of my very first AA meeting, and it was on a Friday night. And I remember that the speaker who talked that night had 30 days of sobriety, and I remember just being in awe that there was somebody there who had 30 days of nothing, and that impressed me more than, well, I mean, I can still remember it today. And so I was there from a treatment center, and I remember I asked her to be my sponsor because they told us, you know, we're supposed to get a sponsor, and it said, you know, that you should get somebody who has what you want. And she had a boyfriend and her own business, and I thought that was something I wanted. So my criteria has changed since then, but somehow being at a meeting on a Friday night with all the newcomers just reminded me of that first meeting that I went to. And I remember her vividly, but apparently I cried throughout the meeting because somebody was handing me Kleenex and I had no idea what I was crying about. So anyway, I just, you know, the fact that there were so many new people here tonight, I just, you know, I'm glad that you're here. And the way I got here, my family, I think many people, most people probably won't relate, but it's my story and I have to tell it. But that gives you a great excuse to come back next week and hear another experience. And because I just sometimes I'm up here and I just feel like this old lady who came from the 60s, and you know, nothing is the same anymore. And so let me share. And I will start with the family that I came from was bizarre. And my mother was one of six children, and she's the only one that got married. All the rest were nuns and priests. So that gives you an idea. We were not a party family. We didn't have, you know, gatherings and a lot of fun, and we were very German. And my mother just died in, she died the end of January, so, you know, family photographs come out. And here is this picture of her mom and dad sitting on a chair like this, and then her sisters and brother, who all the nuns and priests, standing there like this, and my mom on the end with a little smile that just sort of hit the one side of her lip. And that was the picture. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, that is the family that I grew up in, and I think it's pretty unique. And it was just a very, very strange family and very, very holy, and there was no alcoholism in there that I could think of. And I don't know, nobody in that picture was smiling, but I'll tell you, when I look at that picture, I smile. I just think, oh my gosh. And I can smile today. So I grew up in this household where there wasn't a lot of laughter. I mean, if we were German, and if there is a stereotype of German, we were it. I mean, you just, the important things were you did it on time and you just did it. And, you know, and I was thinking today about, I don't remember family parties. I don't remember alcohol in our house. I think I'm sure my parents drank, but I don't remember, like, even, you know, where they might have stored their alcohol. But I can tell you today, if you got alcohol in your house, I know where it is. I still have, you know, I may have, my sobriety date is August 31st of 1981. So, you know, the experiences I'm telling you are from quite a while back. And so anyway, in their house, I don't remember alcohol. But even with the sobriety that I have, if there's alcohol in the house, I just have this little antenna that sort of says, it's here, and that part hasn't gone away. So in my family was just odd. And I can tell you only that that I was never happy. And there was no alcoholics in my family that I could think of, but I know I was never happy. And there's a line in the book that says, you know, we were restless, irritable, and discontent. And I was restless, irritable, and discontent way before I ever took a first drink. I did not like the house we lived in. It was old. I thought it should be new. I had to go to an all-girls Catholic school. I didn't think I should be going there. If they took us on vacation, that's not where I wanted to go. If they took us out to eat, that's not where I wanted to eat. My mother dressed us, and I didn't like her taste. And so I really just didn't like anything. And it just amazes me when I think back that in a family like that, and no alcoholics that I was aware of, that I was able to find my way all by myself. I had never seen anybody drunk. I didn't know, you know, I just didn't know. But I ended up leaving my mother's house as soon as I graduated from high school. She and I did not have a warm, loving relationship. And I left, and my thing was, I just want to be free. I don't want anybody telling me what to do. But what happened is at age 20, I got married, and so that was, I didn't realize that was going to be the end of that dream. It was not a good marriage, and it was abusive. I was afraid of him, and it was just awful, and I wasn't happy. And so we decided to have children, and so I couldn't have children, so we adopted them. So we got this little boy, and I realized, you know, that I really, you know, I wasn't this warm, loving, nurturing mother. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So we got another one, and this time we got a little girl. And she was very cute, but it was like I didn't turn into this mother. And right about this time, I mean, a bunch of things were like happening at one time. The marriage is not going well. I'm getting these things today, and there's a word for everything. And today they're called panic attacks. They're called phobias. But nobody gave a name to it. All I know is I was having these attacks, and I couldn't. You know, I couldn't function very well, and I can remember standing outside a store, and I couldn't go in. I mean, I don't know how to explain that to you, but I couldn't go in, and I'd stand out there, and I just couldn't go in. And so all of this was going on, and I had never really had a drink where I felt the effect of alcohol, but somewhere with all of this going on, a bad marriage, two kids, I was going to a psychiatrist because, you know, these issues or whatever you want to call them. And he had said, you know, that he thought, you know, if I went to him faithfully a couple of years, he thought he could make me more comfortable. In the midst of all of that, I go to a women's shower where they give me a martini. And that was the first time that I felt the effect of alcohol. I don't know what time of day it was, probably early afternoon, because I'm kind of a nervous person. I hadn't had anything to eat. And they gave me that martini, and I couldn't tell you in minutes, but it seemed like very quickly I could breathe and I could talk to people, and I felt the effect of alcohol, and it served me so well for many years. I mean, after drinking the alcohol, I thought, well, I don't need the psychiatrist anymore. I mean, this thing did for me in like, what, 10, 15 minutes? What that doctor says is going to take 2 years. And so I found, you know, once I felt the effect of that alcohol, I was, you know, I never became a party girl. I never really got into trouble. I mean, my story is so boring. I'm just sorry, but I just wanted to be comfortable. I just wanted to be comfortable. I didn't want to have to go through all these things that I was going through, these emotional things. And so immediately I began to drink every day, because it wasn't like, wow, that felt really good. You know, maybe we can do that again next week. It's like, no, you know, I need to get to the store today. And I realized, you need to go in some place you're frightened of, you know, you take some drinks. You need to go to church, and I didn't like going to church, to have a few drinks. You need to take the kids where they need to go, you have a few drinks. And And that's the way I survived for, you know, for years until, I don't know, my, first of all, I mean, as you probably know, if you're in this room, you know, you don't start and keep on with just a drink or two. It's more and more and more. And I was heading down that road, and then, you know, then things started happening, and my husband said, you know, you're a bored housewife, you know, you need to go to work. And so I tried going to work, you know, and that didn't take care of it either. I just needed to drink. And all of these things that I was trying to do that I thought would make it better, you know, nothing was making it better. And then he was starting to get mad at me, and he was always mad at me, but this was a different thing. And I was afraid of him, but, you know, he couldn't stop me from drinking. All I had to do was get very clever. And so, you know, my drinking really just became very, you know, how do you get into the house? It became all-consuming. And, you know, as I drank more and more, it's like, you know, how do you get it into the house? How do you hide it? And then, you know, after a while, because I was a little housewife that I wasn't going out to bars and I wasn't having people buy me drinks. I was living in this little world where nobody was doing what I was doing. And it got to be very, very, very isolating and very hard, and it was all about, after a while, about keeping a supply of alcohol. And I also then, you know, at some point along the line, I'm having trouble with my stomach, and so go to the doctor, and he does, I guess what doctors ask, you know, do you drink? And it's like, well, you know, I have a drink or two every day, and I'm a martini drinker. Well, I mean, the truth of that matter was, maybe for the first week I was a martini drinker, but, you know, after that, I mean, there, I can guarantee you there was no olive, there was no vermouth, there was no glass. I mean, very quickly, you know, when you need to have that drink, I mean, I'm not going to put it in a glass. I just drank it straight from the bottle, and I had bottles hidden over the house. And, you know, my husband became aware, and that was hard, because it made it just harder to get it into the house. And so, and then I realized, you know, he would call me from work, and he'd say, when I get home tonight, we're going to talk about your drinking. And you think, well, let's give him something to talk about. So I mean, that doesn't stop me from drinking. And so, you know, and he would look at me and he would say, you know, look at you. You can't walk straight. You're slurring your words. You know, you can't do the da da da. And I could look him straight in the eye and say, no, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I guess I meant it, but I didn't know what I was like. And I was in AA for a while, and I was taking a woman to a meeting, and she came to my house, and I was going to drive her, and she walked in the house, and she was slurring her words, and she didn't smell very good. And when I called her on it, she said, you know, she looked at me with those eyes like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And it was like hit me. It's like, oh, my God, you know, that's what my husband had to deal with me. But I just wasn't ready to admit it. And so, you know, the way my drinking went is it just got very weird. I mean, it got harder and harder to try to, and to do the deal. So the deal was, you know, trying to live a normal life and to be a mother to these kids that after a while, you know, I'm sorry to tell you, but it was like bringing home puppies, and they start growing up and they're no longer cute. It was hard, it was like I wanted to do it and then I didn't want to do it anymore. And so I tried, but every time I tried, I had to drink to try to to try to do what I was supposed to do. And that meant, you know, you're supposed to go to school functions and you're supposed to, I was a den mother. And the reason I say that is the first thing I learned to be grateful for in sobriety is that I didn't, just knock off a whole Boy Scout den, because I had to take the kids to the meetings on Monday, and I couldn't do that sober. I mean, so before you get in the car with all the screaming boys, you know, you need to, you know, have something to calm you down. And I always drove those boys drunk, and, you know, nothing ever happened. And when I got to AA and heard, you know, what has happened to some people, that was like one of the first things that I learned to be grateful for, is that that I didn't do any damage. But I was trying to do both of those things, and then I had this whole other life where I just hated, and I, you know, I was not happy, and drinking was the only thing that took it away. Stopping drinking was really out of the question. But the doctor had suggested that maybe I the gin was a little hard on my stomach, so he suggested switching to vodka. And so, so I switched to vodka, and I became one of those true believers that, you know, it's clear, and so nobody can tell. And I think that must have been when my husband really started getting on my case. And so, you know, hiding it just became harder and harder and harder. And then as I drank more and more, I just couldn't bring in little bottles anymore. And you know, after years had gone by, I was trying to bring it home, and I wasn't trying. I was bringing it home in half gallons and hoping that it was going to last a while, which it never did. And trying to bring home a half gallon of vodka into your house is not always an easy task. And it meant a bigger purse, for one thing, and bigger bags. And then, you know, I mean, if you're a housewife, you know, you got to do this thing, which is not like what, you know, other people are doing. And I was hiding bottles around the house and trying to bring it in. And then because I am the housewife, you can't let people at the liquor store know what you're doing. So, you know, one day is like the liquor store, one day is a drug store, the next day is a grocery store, you know, a day something out of the neighborhood, and just try to keep bringing it in, but nobody sees you, you know, too many times. And then if it's at the grocery store, you try like your half gallon of vodka and mix it with like some tomatoes or something and hope people will think it's your grocery shopping. I don't know. I swear to you, in sobriety, I've seen people do that, and I think, I know what you're doing. And so it's just a very bizarre way to live, and it was not getting any better. And then I was starting to have some health problems, and then it occurs to me really that the problem is my husband. And I truly believe that. And I thought, you know, if I just didn't have this man in my life, then I wouldn't have to drink anymore. And so we got divorced. And you know what? And what happened was he was like the one person that really knew what was going on in the house. You know, all the bizarre behavior and stuff. And now he was gone, and I had the two kids. And you know, the end of my drinking, I'm not sure what was going on. I couldn't tell you. I could guarantee you I wasn't going to parent teacher conferences, and I wasn't going to help out at school anymore. And I was barely hanging on to my job because I was sleeping with the boss. And I think that allowed me to get, you know, some behavior that other people didn't get away with. And I was just hanging on, you know, to all of these things, and none of it was very pretty. And so, you know, once he was gone, it was like I didn't have to show up for anything, I wasn't taking the kids anywhere, I don't know. It was like I don't know what happened. All I know is it was pretty much drinking around the clock. But, you know, I always justified the drinking. If somebody would have said, "Do you drink in the morning?" I would say, you know, when does night become morning? You know, is that 2 o'clock? Is it 4 o'clock? Is it 5 o'clock? Because it was pretty much, you know, around the clock. I would, you know, just drink until I guess it was time to go to sleep. And then, you know, when you wake up in the night, you know, you're drinking during the night. And then in the morning, you have to drink it before you go to work. And it was just round the clock. And then, you know, and then it was like, well, you know, I'm really depressed. So then we had some antidepressants. And then it's like, oh, I'm really nervous. So then there was something else to take. And it got very ugly very fast. And somehow I'm still not sure today, after all these years, what happened, except that a neighbor ended up taking me to the hospital. And in the hospital, I guess that was almost the end of my drinking. And I was there, and they malnutrition, because, you know, I don't know about you, but when I drink, I don't want to eat, because, you know, anything that's going to spoil the effect of alcohol, I don't want to have to deal with. And so I wasn't eating very much, and I lost a lot of weight, and I hadn't been to work in a while. And so here I am in the hospital, and when I was there, they told me, I guess I didn't know that I had a choice, but they told me I would be going into a treatment center after that. So I went into the treatment center. And I was so naive about alcoholism, I just can't believe, I just didn't know. And I tried to sneak alcohol into the treatment center, and I was shocked when they went through my luggage. Like, what? I just didn't know. And so then I had my sister bring me some pills, and bless her heart, she brought me some pills. And so I didn't get off to a great start in the treatment center, but I did complete the full treatment. And by the time I left the center, I thought, I thought that I was cured, because in the treatment center we got pamphlets and we got readings and we had group therapy and we got doctor's terminology and we got these charts that showed the ups and downs of, you know, the alcoholism, and I thought I knew everything. So I'm very I'm convinced that once I leave there, you know, I'm good. I know everything now. I understand it's the first drink that gets you drunk. But I got home, and here's this house and these two kids and the job. And the first day I got out of treatment, I drank again. It's like, you know, I didn't know what else to do. So it took me a while to get honest with my sponsor at that time. And you know, she said, well, why didn't you call me? And I said, well, because I was going to drink. I knew enough to know that if I called her, she'd say, don't drink. And so I knew enough about that. But so my, you know, when I got started in AA, it was very slow for me, because I didn't come in here and think, wow, I'm home. You know, wow, I found the answer. It was like, you know, I just don't know. And I was still this nervous, very shy person. And going to a meeting, you know, with people was very, it was very hard for me. And the first, I would say, possibly year that I was sober, I was so sick to my stomach, because I just hadn't faced people with nothing in my system for a long, long time. And so here I am after I did go and I drank again, and it was a couple of months, and then finally I just couldn't do that anymore. And I got honest with the sponsor, and then I think I can say yes, you know, August 31st in 1981, it was my sobriety date. Nothing specific happened that day. For some reason that day I didn't take the drink, and I started on my journey, and I had no goals here. I didn't think maybe I'll stick around for a month, or, you know, I'll try a year, or I'll, it's like, I don't know, I just put these little blinders on and I just followed, and I didn't know what was going to happen next. I didn't know what my life would be like. I just tried to do what they asked me to do, and it was not easy. I was good at, like, the meeting, like once we could sit down, you know, when the meeting starts and I didn't have to do anything, I was fine until the meeting ended. But it's that time before, you know, when you're supposed to talk to people or say hi or something, or, you know, at the end of the meeting, it was just terrifying for me. But for some reason, you know, I was able to stay and to do it. And it just took me a while to turn yourself over to the program. I don't even know what the word is, but I just followed along. And I had a couple of sponsors, and finally I got a sponsor, and I took her, I asked her to be my sponsor, because she had what I wanted, and what she had was a spiritual program that I wanted. And despite all of this Catholic religion and all these nuns and priests, by the time I got here, I was just done. I was just done. When you start looking at those steps and they're talking about higher power, and you know they mean God, and you think, But she did. She kind of reflected the program, and she was bubbly and fun, and I wanted that, and I wanted the spirituality that she had. And so she was my sponsor, actually, until I left St. Louis. I got sober in St. Louis, and she was absolutely amazing for me. And she, with her help, I was able to, you know, to do all the steps and work with her. And we did something that they don't really recommend, and that's how she became my best friend. And usually they say, you know, that's really not a very good idea. But she had a way of, like, her name was Glenda, and Glenda would look at me and she'd say, Marianne, I'm talking to you as your sponsor. And it was like, okay. So we somehow or other, we were able, or she was able to work with me, and at times, you know, separate that friendship from the sponsorship. And she would never let me feel sorry for myself. I was such a whiner when I got here. Whine, 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 complain, poor me, the victim. And she would never let me get away with it. And so apparently, you know, that was very good for me. At 9 years sober, I met a man, and he moved out here, and then I followed him out like a year or two later and got married out here. And then life changed again, because the meetings back in St. Louis, when I got sober, they asked you to do commitments just like they do out here, but the commitment was for a month. And I thought, oh my God, a month? They want me to do something for a month? And it just seemed impossible. Well, luckily I had that under my belt by the time I got here, because when I got to California, they were talking about 6 months or a year commitment. And I just thought, I can't believe they want me to do something for a year. But, you know, I had learned, and I had already got the month thing down, so I was able to do that. And I just had to learn, you know, that AA to me out in California has been bigger. The meetings are bigger. We have podiums and microphones. I had never been used to that before. And I had to get started like a newcomer out here. I didn't know anybody. My husband is not in the program. And start out, you know, with a new sponsor out here. And I eventually found Gloria, my sponsor, for a number of years until she got very sick. And she had that same thing. She was bubbly and she was busy. And it was, come on, Marianne, you know, let's go. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I just relished that. I just followed her right along. And it was just an amazing time for me. And, you know, now I have a sponsor who I love very dearly, but, you know, her personality is very different from Gloria. But today apparently she has what I need. And so I'm very happy with the sponsorship I had today, that I have today. And I wanted to, you know, I always like to talk a little bit about the steps, because one of the things I couldn't understand when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were saying to me, you can't drink, you know, we don't take pills, we don't take anything, and then they offer the steps. Now, I could not figure out what those steps had to do with me not drinking. And, you know, with all of the, with the years that I've been in the program, I realize as I look back what they did for me. And what happened was, number one, just saying I'm powerless over alcohol. I did not know I was powerless. I mean, for one thing, when it's the only thing that makes you comfortable, how do you say, well, you know, I thought that gave me power, not that I was powerless. And so it was kind of a hard pill to swallow to think that I was powerless over alcohol. But I did, you know, and the way I do the program today, I don't have the women I sponsor do a lot of writing. But when I came in, they had me do writing. And that is one of the ways that I learned that I was powerless over alcohol. They had me write down, like, some of the things that I had done while I was drinking. And, you know, they were very dangerous, you know, putting my kids in danger, putting the house in danger, because I would do things with electrical equipment, and I was, we don't even want to go into that, but I never could do anything without drinking first. And so, you know, I put my house in danger, my kids in danger, and, you know, your alcoholic life becomes the only normal one. So never, you know, the first step got me to realize I was powerless over alcohol. And then the second and third, I was able to find a power greater than myself. And that was really hard, because when I got here, I was just done. And what I learned through my sponsor and from reading in the book was that, you know, I wanted like a Santa Claus God. You know, I had my list, you know, the things I wanted, you know, and I didn't get them. And so it was, you know, thinking, well, I'm done. You know, there's no God. I don't care. You know, I've done this. If you had to live the way I had to live with all these nuns and priests, you wouldn't be going for this either. And, you know, I was turned like to put it down, you know, just leave it alone. And, you know, and my sponsor had said to me, you know, do you believe that I believe? And that was the way that I started, was with doing what she believed. Then I had to do 4 and 5, which was the beginning of trust, because I did my inventory as was suggested. And it was suggested I do it within the first year, because if you didn't, you were a loser. And I thought, oh, my God, I've been a loser all my life. Please don't let me be a loser in AA. So I did my inventory, and then I did the fifth step. And the fifth step to me represented that I trusted another human being, because I told this woman, you know, all the things that you think you're never going to tell anybody else. And for me, you know, the things weren't, you know, I didn't have stories about robbing and police and stuff. But the things that were the hardest to admit was the way that I had treated my children. And it was like I would have rather told you that I robbed a store, that, you know, that I did something like that, than to talk about, you know, what I had done to these kids, that, you know, that I were adopted. I couldn't even fall back on, well, you know, I really didn't want to have children, but I got pregnant. It was like, no, we went through a lot of trouble to get those kids. And so that I trusted this woman that I could tell her those things. And that was a big deal for me. So to me, 5 really represented trust in another human being. And then the start of, you know, learning about character defects, because, you know, the word character defects, when I got here, they had no meaning, really. I didn't know what they were talking about. I could tell you I was mad, but I couldn't, you know, they were talking about all these other words, you know, resentments and anger and the 7 deadly sins. And I really couldn't, it took me a while to understand, you know, like what they were talking about. And, you know, I hate to tell you, but after all of these years now, I still have the resentment gene. It's like, I don't know when that will ever go away, but I can get this thing about resentments, and they just come to me. And so it's like I'll have a resentment with somebody, and I can't let it go. And it's not, I can't like just sit there and think, now what did they do to me? It's like, I know, it just comes, and it's very frustrating to me. And I have something on my dresser that talks about resentment, and it's like, to the extent that you let the resentments into your life, do you lose the day ahead of you? And sometimes I just look at it and I think, I don't care. But other days, other days I really do care, and then I try to work on that. And then 8 and 9, when I had to make my amends, they were all kind of hard for me. I didn't have that many, but I had an excuse for all of them not to do it. It was like, for my parents, well, they never really did have a big understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous. They couldn't even bring themselves to say the words Alcoholics Anonymous. It was always, where you're going, those meetings, and I thought, well, how do you make amends to them when you can't, when they don't want to hear about Alcoholics Anonymous? And my sponsor told me that I could make amends. I did not have to mention the words Alcoholics Anonymous. All I had to do was share with them, what I was making amends for, and I did that to them, and there was a lot of, like, I don't think that there was really understanding, but what happened was I thought that after I did it, that I'd have this warm, loving relationship with my parents, and we'd be having lunch together, and that didn't happen. And I thought, maybe when I made my amends, I made them wrong. But I was told that I really didn't do it wrong. I just didn't get the results I expected. But eight, and then I had to, make amends to my children. And to me, I still do that today. I can do things for them now that I was never able to do for them before. And so I made the verbal amends, but today I try to treat them in a way that I never treated them then. And despite all of the stuff that we went through, my kids, if I may say so, I mean, they're both amazing and they're doing well, and they seem to make it okay in life. They don't seem to hold this anger and resentment towards me, which surprises me. And they're doing well and they're married, and I just look at them and I think, how did that happen? And it certainly wasn't my doing, and I love them dearly. I mean, considering the fact that when I first got them, it was not what I wanted. I mean, it's amazing that transformation has taken place. And I think, again, it's a result of the steps and trying to do what, we're taught here. So I did the amends to them, and that took care of 8 and 9. And it really solved a lot of, I think, some of the anger and some of the stuff that just kind of hangs over you when you get sober. And it's that piddly little crap that, that just really, it's on your shoulders, and the amends helped to get rid of some of that. Then I had that ex-husband, and that one, the truth is, it took me 9 years to do it, because I went through a lot of, first it was, I will never make amends to him for everything that he did to me, and then you hang around here for a while, and people are talking about making amends, and so then it became like, well, how would I do that? And they said, pray for willingness. So then I was like, all right, pray for willingness. And then I think my last line of defense was, do I have to mean it? And then somebody told me, you don't have to mean it. All you got to do is do it. And I will tell you, when I made amends to him, I really did mean it, because by that time I realized what kind of a wife I had been, and I'd been a terrible wife, and I was, I was drunk and smelly, and I couldn't walk, and I couldn't, and I was hiding, and I was taking money, and the whole thing. And so by that time I really realized the kind of wife I'd been, and it made it easier to make amends to him. So, 10 keeps me from carrying much more baggage again, because if I'm doing an inventory at night, I know it, at night when I go to bed what kind of a day I've had. I don't have to sit there and think about it. I'm either going to go to sleep peacefully, or I'm up like this and go, I know what I need to do. And 11 taught me how to pray only for knowledge of his will for you, for me, and the power to carry it out. And that made it very, very simple for me, and it changed the way I pray. So I don't have my list anymore about, I want this for my kids, and I want this for my husband, and I want, this for them. And it changed the whole way I prayed. And then 12, of course, is, practice these principles in all our affairs, which I try to do, and, carry the message. And I try to do those things. And I think in all the years that I've been sober, I have always done Alcoholics Anonymous. There's never been a time, that I didn't do it. And as a result, I think my life has changed so much. It's, you know, you're truly not the same woman that you came in. At least I'm not. And, you know, the changes may be very subtle, but, you know, there's a couple of big changes in this, you know, this woman who, you know, would sit outside of a store and couldn't go in, you know, has, you know, traveled across the country. And I, you know, I don't like to say too much about, like our travel, but the thing is we travel a lot, and I was always so afraid, and I, you know, like I said, of all the, you know, the phobias and stuff I had, and with this man that I'm married to, we travel so much. And a couple of years ago we were in Laos. We had taken a trip to Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, and we were riding elephants bareback in Laos into a river with a brush so we could like clean the elephants. And that to me, maybe only for me, it just epitomized the change that had taken place with the years that I've spent in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was willing to do it, and I may be scared getting on a plane, and I may be scared in those countries, and I may be wondering, you know, about the food that we're eating, and ooh, what's in this river with the elephants. But the, you know, the thing is that I have done it. And when I was on that day, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, how do you get from, you know, this frightened little girl, you know, can't even go into a store, to standing out here, you know, doing what I'm going to do today. And somehow in all these years with doing what was suggested in this program, even though I didn't know where it was going to take me, I mean, it took me here. And so I'm glad that I got a chance to share this with you tonight, and I thank you for inviting me.